the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, one of the big issues facing many retirees today is longevity. Will your assets last throughout retirement? Today, we're going to be talking about investment strategies that can help achieve that. Joining me on the program is Moshe Maleski. He's professor of finance at the Schulich School of Business at York University. He's also published a book called King William's Tontine. You know, Professor, several weeks ago, I read the fourth edition of A History of Interest Rates by Sidney Homer and Professor Silla. And in the Middle Ages, they talked about the emergence of something called an annuity, which was used as a form of finance by governments. In other words, the annuity preceded the bond market, and it offered individuals in townships or in a country a lifetime of income. You've written a book called King William's Tontine. I wonder if you might talk about that and why that has a lot of relevance to today's annuities and insurance products.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your show and to talk about this. As you correctly point out, annuities have preceded the bond market. In fact, I would say that annuities have preceded almost every other form of investment. They were available not hundreds of years ago, but thousands of years ago. Roman soldiers were granted annuities when they retired, so to speak, when they stopped fighting. In fact, there's even a reference in the Bible to annuities that were paid to individuals. So the annuity has a very, very long history, which sometimes means that you manage to accumulate quite a bit of controversy and scandal, as well as good stories. But you're absolutely right. They have been a very big part of the financial fabric for centuries.
Now, something that really struck me, and many people don't realize this, back in the days, let's say my parents' days, maybe your parents' days, you know, our parents might have gone to work for a company, let's say like General Motors. They worked for the company 30 years. They got a Timex watch, and they had something called a defined benefit pension plan. Isn't a defined benefit pension plan in many ways the equivalent of an annuity? Because GM would take a lump sum of money that they had put aside for, let's say, my dad or your dad. They'd go to an insurance company and they'd say, based on this individual's life and that of his wife, what will you give this person for a pension for the rest of their life? Weren't defined benefit pension plans in many ways annuities?
Yes, and in fact, I'll add to that, it shouldn't be in the past tense. There are still many Americans that are retired or are retiring on defined benefit pensions. It's the newer, the younger employees that no longer have that option available to them in the private sector. In the public sector, if you're a teacher or a fireman or a police officer, many people still have access to it. But to answer your question, a pension is essentially an annuity. I would call a pension an annuity, and vice versa. When you buy an annuity from an insurance company, you're effectively buying a personal pension.
There are so many aspects to annuities today. There's living benefits, there's conversions to long-term retirement homes, there's all kinds of add-ons that you can give to an annuity, there's certain income guarantees. Why is it that annuities, in many ways, have gotten, I would say, two things. Number one, they're misunderstood, and number two, they have been given a bad reputation by individuals in the financial industry. In fact, a prominent financial advisor attacks them on television all the time. Why do you think that takes place?
So, Jim, you know, the first thing that's very important for listeners to understand is that the word annuity is now meaningless. It's like saying the word fund. If I were to ask you, Jim, so what do you think about funds? Are they a good idea or a bad idea? Do you own funds? Do you like funds? Or do you hate funds? The question would be meaningless because you can have mutual funds and exchange-traded funds and hedge funds. And the same thing is now happening with the word annuity. There are so many different types of annuity that can be completely different things that it's lost its meaning. So when somebody asks me, so what do you think about annuities? My immediate response is, which one? Explain to me what you're talking about. Oh, you mean a single premium income annuity? I think they're a great idea. Oh, you mean an equity indexed annuity. Oh, you're talking about a variable annuity. It's completely different. And each one is a different product. And, you know, I can certainly understand why some people are fans of some, if not the other. But anybody that condemns the word annuity completely is, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, is condemning pensions. That's apple pie, mother's milk. What do you mean? What's wrong with a pension? A pension's a wonderful thing. I think even the biggest, you know, I can't say the word haters, but the people that are most opposed to annuities would still agree that pensions are a good idea. The question becomes, once you throw in expensive bells and whistles and riders and guarantees and features that you don't need, then it's not a problem with the annuity. It's what you've added to the annuity. It's the person that goes into the pizza store. Pizza's great, but they load on a whole bunch of very, very unhealthy toppings. My issue is with the toppings, not the pizza. And I think it's the same thing here.
Now, let's talk about an issue that many retirees are facing today as a result of several factors. Number one, if you take the last decade, we had two bear markets, which were devastating on several individuals' portfolios. So by the time they got to retirement, they didn't have the money they thought they were going to have. That was issue number one. Issue number two, the rates of return on investments aren't what they used to be. In the year 2000, I could have got 7% and 8%, Professor, very easily in a very safe investment. Getting 7% and 8% today is very difficult, and you're lucky if you can get 2 to 3. Issue number three is, as a result of either better eating habits, advances in medicine, people are living longer. So if you retire at age 65, you can't really predict how long you will need your portfolio to take care of you. And a lot of times, as we've seen in the last 15 years, we've seen risk in the marketplace that didn't exist in many ways, let's say in the 80s or 90s. They were less volatile. The returns were more predictable than what we've seen in the last 15 years. So let's talk about those three issues and how the annuity fits in and can solve some of those issues for retirees.
So as you pointed out, real interest rates that are relatively safe after inflation, and certainly after income taxes, have plummeted. Real interest rates in the 2000 time period were close to 4%. Now they're probably zero, maybe 1% at most. What all of this means is that retirement is a lot more expensive than it was in the past. If you think of retirement as a vacation that you're going to take, that vacation has become a lot more expensive, possibly doubling, if not tripling in price over the last 20 years, partially because of market, partially because of longevity, and certainly because of interest rates, which is why I think people have to consider alternative strategies and products that they might not have included in the past in their portfolio. So I completely agree that an annuity can certainly help part of the problem. Can't solve all your problems. It's not a silver bullet, but that's like any diversified portfolio. It should have a variety of assets, and I think that the annuity should be one of them. It's like a well-balanced breakfast. You want to have some orange juice. You certainly want to have some granola. You want yogurt. You want coffee. I mean, it's just one of the ingredients in a balanced budget, but it is not the silver bullet in the retirement arena. You certainly can't shun them either. I think that's another problem, that people just have a mental block. They say, anything with the word A in it, I'm not considering. That's a very, very big part of the retirement menu.
The thing that really strikes me is no other product can offer some of the guarantees that annuities offer. And that's what several people, as you talk about today, if you work for the government, many government employees have the equivalent of annuity because they have a pension plan that will last them throughout their entire lifetime, no matter how long they live, whether they live to be 75, 85, or 105. And that, to me, Professor, is one of the big risks today. In addition to low risk, because of medical advances, the things that they have, I think of my own grandparents. My grandfather died early because of a heart attack, but due to certain medications, my grandmother lived to be almost nearly age 80. My mother today is age 87. So the lifespan has increased over the decades, and that brings risk into a retirement plan that sometimes cannot be met with investments outright, like stocks and bonds.
Yeah, Jim, it's a bit odd sometimes to talk about living a long time as being a risk. My grandfather, who made it in his late 90s, used to get upset at me when I talked about longevity risk, which is the term that's used by statisticians. He always used to say to me, Moshe, longevity is a blessing, it's not a risk. Stop using the word risk to describe what happens when you live a long, prosperous life. Of course, the longevity is the blessing. The cost of longevity is the risk. And I think that's what people have to figure out how to manage. Some people say, well, just save more for retirement and you'll be fine. Others say, well, retire later. Don't spend as much. I look at it as, well, you need an insurance solution as well. There's an insurance element, small probability, large magnitude. And you want some sort of insurance. And I think that the annuity fits well in that space.
Why is it, Professor, there's such a disparity? Most of the individuals that I have interviewed that have been positive on annuities, individuals like yourself, Nobel laureate Robert Merton from Harvard University, Wade Fow, have done studies on income. And this is something that you teach at the university. You teach income strategies and wealth management strategies. Are in favor of annuities, for example, combined with things like stocks, is the ideal solution to handle these issues of, let's say, outliving assets. And yet the financial industry almost takes the opposite view. What accounts for this disparity between, let's say, what you are doing in the academic world studying this and what's going on Wall Street?
You know, I think that what happens is, partially, if I can be a bit philosophical here, is you take a good product and you layer on it so many fees and commissions and riders and bells and whistles that you almost destroy the reason the product was brought into existence to begin with. I hate to use the pizza analogy again. If your toppings end up costing five times what the pizza costs, you're not really buying a pizza. You're buying some toppings and you're putting a pizza under it. And I think that's the same thing. I believe that the annuity chassis, the underlying structure, is very important and it helps individuals manage retirement risk. But if you come along and layer on it fees and guarantees and promises that you don't really need and a whole bunch of features that are unnecessary, you make it very expensive and then it becomes a problem. You know, it's like telling someone I need to have flood insurance or I need earthquake insurance or I need various types of insurance. Yes, I need them, but how expensive is it? And then I hear the price and I say, I'm sorry, I can't afford that. It's the same thing. We need longevity insurance. We need this longevity protection. But if you make it too expensive, it simply becomes unaffordable. So I think that's where the chasm, the break is between the financial industry that's opposed to it and the academic industry that thinks that they're very important. The gap there is what happens in between the theory and the practice.
What can be done? You take an individual that has a certain lifestyle, and today in many public corporations, they no longer have the defined benefit pension plan. A few of them still exist. Most of them are 401k plans or a defined contribution plan. So whatever you accumulate between you and your employer, but when it comes to retirement, that's all you have. Now, today, because of low interest rates, and people forget, even in the stock market from the year 2000 to the year 2013, the stock market on a price wise virtually went nowhere for 13 years. So if you were counting on increasing income or increasing assets, it really didn't work out that well during that period of time. Let's talk about how annuities can fit in with a combination of, let's say, another asset class, be it bonds or even stocks, to, let's say, take care of an individual's retirement needs and income needs most especially.
Yeah, so I think once you add this to your portfolio, you can start thinking about some of the other investments that you hold and think differently. You know, I personally believe, I know this is controversial, that once you've added an annuity to the portfolio, because of the downside protection you've created, you can afford to take a little bit more risk with the other assets that you have. You can afford to be more aggressive. You certainly should be more aggressive with the assets inside if it's a variable annuity with a guarantee. Why would you pay for a guarantee otherwise? So when you combine them together, you end up having sort of value created by the fact that you have this protection that you wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. This is quite different from adding a bond portfolio or bonds to a stock portfolio. It's more than just diversification. You're not just diversifying your portfolio. In some sense, you're creating a floor on how low the income can get, which means that you can afford to take on more risk. Now, I know that that's controversial. Not everybody might agree with me. Some people might say, oh, that's unsuitable to tell people in their 70s and 80s to have that sort of exposure. But on the flip side, if you have the downside protection, it certainly makes sense to me.
Well, one of the risks that you run into, and I've worked in the retirement market for over three decades, you know, you take somebody that retires at age 65, they're fairly good health, they're traveling, they're doing the things they weren't able to do during their working career. But as you get into your, let's say, latter 70s or even into your 80s or even more, that's when your medical expenses really start to increase. So you've got to have something in your portfolio that increases over time, which is the role stocks have traditionally played. But also, you have to have that protection, Professor, as we saw in the year 2000 to 2002, and between 2007 and 2009, when the stock markets lost over 50% of their value. And also, interest rates, as a result of central bank action, got down to the lowest point in recorded human history. So when you have something steady, and let's talk about the role of the annuity that says, okay, I'm going to give X amount of dollars to an annuity, and let's talk about the immediate annuity and what that means. In other words, that income check that comes in, and if it covers most of your living expenses, that doesn't change. You get it every single month, no matter what Janet Yellen's doing or Congress is doing or what the stock market's doing.
It does. In fact, I think it's hard to quantify the benefit of this, but if you reach your 90s and possibly even become a centenarian, there's close to 100,000 of them in the U.S. today, I think the last thing on your mind is balancing your portfolio. I mean, the last thing you really want to be doing is figuring out how much you can spend at that point in your life cycle, and having that steady income, especially if it rises with the consumer price index, is a very valuable component.
So, I know you wrote your book on annuities in their earlier stages as they emerged. As you mentioned, they've been around longer than anything that we ever created in the financial markets like stocks and bonds. You're writing another book. Let's talk about that and talk about, is there a definitive source or a place an individual can go to get educated? Because as you pointed out, you start out with the pizza, but then if you start adding like 15 or 20 different toppings, all of a sudden that pizza has become two or three times more expensive and you're paying for a lot of stuff. It's like driving into a car lot. You want to drive a car or buy a car. But if you add chrome wheels, you add a super sound system, you add electric seats, you add leather, all of a sudden, what was a $20,000 car can become a $30,000 car.
Yeah, again, I hate to sort of flog this horse of the pizza analogy, but the toppings not only make it a lot more expensive, sometimes they neutralize each other. I mean, one offsets the other and you get absolutely no flavor, or it tastes bland, or it just tastes miserable. I mean, that's what happens. You're putting on all these offsetting guarantees that you look at this and you say, what are you doing here? You just ruined the taste of this perfectly good pizza. I think that's part of the problem. It's not just the expense. It's you're offsetting different guarantees and features that you don't really need. And I hate to say this, part of it is because of the fact that the financial services industry is compensating those people for selling these instruments. And, you know, the more riders you add on, or perhaps the more toppings you put on the pizza, the more they're going to get compensated. So to answer your question, I think that an individual should make sure to learn about these things and to educate themselves about these things before they enter into that relationship or into that conversation with the person selling the annuity. We all know, do not step on a car lot to buy a car unless you know exactly what you're doing, because you will be fleeced. You know that. It's almost a cliche. You don't walk into a car lot and say, so what do you recommend? You know exactly what you're buying so that you don't overbuy. And I think the same thing should happen with an annuity. You have to educate yourself.
And where can an individual get unbiased information about an annuity so that, for example, when they talk to an advisor or they talk to an insurance company, they're getting exactly what they need to fit their financial needs and not walk out with something they really don't need and paying the extra cost?
So look, again, this might be unpopular, but I would not start with the insurance company's website. I would go to a regulator, whether it's FINRA or the SEC or one of the state insurance commissions. Go to that website and look up annuities and see what they say. And once you've sort of understood the basics and some of the traps and the pitfalls, then you start wandering around the various pretty insurance company websites to see what's on sale today. But you've got to educate yourself and you have to know what source you're going to. This isn't a situation where, okay, buy my book and you'll learn everything there is to know about annuities. It just doesn't work like that. You have to go to multiple sources, make sure you understand what the integrity of the source is. Then you go into an intelligent conversation with an advisor who's going to help you pick the final one.
And Professor, what about it also, in many cases, depends on a person's spending needs, their health, and the size of their portfolio. Let's take Larry Lots of Bucks. He was fortunate. Maybe he was an executive at a corporation. He had stock options. He's got pensions. He's got, you know, millions and millions of dollars. He may not need an annuity unless he wants something that's really predictable and he's very risk adverse versus, let's say, somebody that may not have accumulated enough assets, but maybe has enough to create a pension for themselves through an annuity and maybe supplement it with some investments in equities.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've got to run in a couple of minutes. I've got to go teach. But the way I like to think of this is a U-shaped curve. Think of a U, the letter U, and invert it, put it upside down. And that's the way the annuity picture should be viewed. At the very, very wealthy end, you know, the Bill Gates of the world and the Warren Buffetts of the world, they don't need an annuity. They're never going to run out of money. Their sources of income are guaranteed for their grandkids' grandkids. They don't have to go out and buy a product that guarantees them an income because they're afraid they're going to run out of money. So the allocation to them should be zero. Whoever sells them an annuity should be shot. At the flip side, somebody that's surviving on Social Security, they have very, very little saved. The majority of their income is coming from Social Security benefits. They already have the annuity called Social Security. I cannot in good conscience tell them to take the $13,000 that they have saved up in a bank account and buy an annuity. There's absolutely no need for that. Keep it for emergencies. Keep it liquid. That's the left corner of the U, the upside down U. In the middle, you have the middle class that aren't as wealthy as the Bill Gates and the Warren Buffetts. They're not just sustaining themselves on Social Security. They have a nest egg, a 401k, an IRA that they're trying to figure out how to allocate at retirement. They'd be a good candidate for allocating some to an annuity, provided that they already don't have defined benefit pension income. I mean, if he's a fireman and his wife is a teacher, they're probably getting a defined benefit pension from two sources together with Social Security. They don't need more annuity income. So you really do have to look at what I call the rest of their balance sheet before you make an investment recommendation.
Well, listen, Professor, I'm going to let you get back to the classroom. I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Great advice, and thanks for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Jim. Thank you very much.
You know, it was interesting having Professor Maleski here on the program because there's a disparity between the financial industry and then professors like Robert Merton at Harvard University or Wade Fow at American University that are talking about the use of annuities. And I think it's like anything else out there today, as the professor just talked about. You start adding all kinds of toppings and all kinds of bells and whistles, which make the product more useful. But like anything else, it takes a plan. You need to know what your income needs are. You need to know what your probabilities of life expectancy between you and your spouse, and then make an informed decision that will help you live out your retirement years without the risk or worries of going broke. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.